Okay. So yeah, this morning in the work meeting or just afterwards, we opened one of Ajahn Brahm's books on a random page. It's The Art of Disappearing, my favorite Dhamma book, probably, that's other than the suttas. Well, yes, it's more accessible sometimes and it's very direct because it's speaking from experience. And we opened it on a subject that's one of my favorite themes, the bliss of cessation. And I said, is this a bit too much for first thing in the morning? But everyone was up for it. So we read it out. And of course, Ajahn Brahm, being Ajahn Brahm, speaks about cessation at some of the deeper levels, the cessation of the sensory input, and then even the five senses themselves, including thought, including thinking, and moving into very peaceful, blissful states of stillness and eventually complete cessation. So this is really talking about, the summation of the path. And it's something that may seem very far away from many of us, but it's an interesting idea that cessation can be bliss. And I think for many of us, we have this rather negative relationship with the idea of things ending, of cessation. So I thought I'd try and weave that in a little bit to the metta, and I've no idea how this is going to work. But just to try and see if we can start to notice the peace of things ending, start to notice that when things end, there is a stillness, there is a beauty, a peacefulness there. It's not only an absence, it's not only a loss. Sometimes it can feel that way, and that's to be included too. If anything like that comes up for you, that you start to grieve or feel sadness around something that's ceased or something that you've lost, maybe a relationship, maybe an old friend, or maybe a wonderful event that's just, happened and finished too fast, whatever it might be, there can be also a little bit of grief. But I'm going to help us direct the mind, hopefully, towards also the silence and the peace of things ending. And they can be really simple things like the end of a breath, the end of an out-breath, and that gap in between before we breathe in. Or it can be the ending of the sound of my voice as I'm teaching to you. Or maybe the ending of the phrase of metta that you put into your mind, just learning to rest in that space and learning to notice the peace. So I thought we'd perhaps start by just establishing a little bit of a perception of impermanence, noticing that things arise and pass constantly in our bodies and minds, and then perhaps intentionally bringing some loving kindness towards that. And we might still continue with bringing in the loved person, maybe. In my case, it's quite easy because we've just had Bhante Sujata over here. And I think for everyone who was involved in that tour, and especially for those of us who were gathered here at Anukampa Grove, there was a lot of very, very rich and incredibly open conversation about all kinds of things. And I certainly got a glimpse into the depth of Bhante's humanity as well as cleverness, which is very obvious and sometimes even intimidating, but also the fact that he has such a big and compassionate heart. And there was a lot to rejoice in. And of course, now he flew back yesterday, so there's an absence. Something has ended. And rather than feeling sadness or a sort of vacuum around that, I'm actually finding that the space to rejoice in what has been given and in how not only myself, but the community has felt enriched. So in that ending too, there's something to rejoice in, something that we've received. So these are just some ideas, because I'm not quite sure how I can really direct or raise these things as we go. I'll see how it goes. But just giving you an overview so that if any of these themes arise for you, you can just notice them as endings and perhaps see if you can find some peace, some loving kindness towards those mini cessations that can happen in our bodies, in our minds, and in our lives. Okay, does that make sense? Okay, so we'll see how it goes. So I don't know about you, but I usually need to take a little bit more time in the morning to have a sip of hot water, maybe to really land in the space. You know, we've had already quite a lot of sensory input, meeting one another, hearing our hellos, and coming together as a group. So when you're ready, just see if you can gently move inside yourself, perhaps close your eyes. And please find a comfortable place to sit or to lie down. So meditation doesn't have to be and doesn't depend on a posture. You don't have to sit rigid and upright. You can find the most comfortable way to put your body right now, especially for people who might not have meditated much before. You're really, really welcome to sit on a sofa, to lie down, just to relax. This is a gift for yourself. This is not something you have to get right. And at any point, if you find there's some discomfort arising in the body, you can mindfully, gently, and kindly adjust your posture, adjust your limb. I see cushions being handed out. This is very nice. Make sure you're warm enough. Get another blanket or a shawl. I don't think that this is sort of being too indulgent. This is a way of showing metta, setting up the intention of metta towards your body and mind so that your mind can trust you. And when you're ready, if it feels comfortable, you can gently close your eyes. And with your eyes closed, see if you can move into the world of feelings, away from conceptions and thoughts. Let them be there. But also notice there's a world beyond thinking, a world of direct experience, of sensations arising in your body. And usually it's those sticky or coarse sensations that come to mind first of all. For me, there's a tension in the shoulders. So I'm just noticing if there's anything I can do to loosen those feelings. Roll my shoulders, move my neck, and just let the shoulders relax. And see if I can establish an attitude of welcoming those feelings, welcoming them in. Relaxing with the feelings. As a way to just make peace, let them be. You might also notice stronger sensations in the area of the buttocks, the hips, which bear most of the weight of the body if you're sitting on the floor or in a chair. So just check that the weight is evenly distributed between your two buttocks as best as possible. Nothing is pinched. And notice if it feels good to just gently stretch up through the back, again towards the shoulders, through the neck, so that you have a sense of being grounded but also upright. Fresh, poised. Noticing perhaps your ankles, your knees, other areas that if you're on the floor will be in contact with the ground. Just make sure they have enough space. You can perhaps give your ankles a bit more space by moving them away from the shins. Or if you're seated on a chair, check that your feet are slightly, very slightly forward from your knees. so that the weight, the pressure on your knees is dispersed. And notice the feeling of the feet on the ground. And once again, just scanning through your body, noticing if any sensations have changed. Perhaps there's a softening, a loosening of tension. A more even distribution of weight. Perhaps a quietening of thought. Perhaps if you're used to viewing things through the lens of impermanence, perhaps you can notice the arising and passing away of sensations as they happen. No sooner than things arise, they pass away. Sometimes we can sense this as a kind of tingling feeling, maybe in the palms of the hands, the fingers, the fingertips. See if you can notice that there's a peace when things settle down, when things end. And extend your friendliness to the silence, the space between the thoughts. Perhaps noticing the space between the breaths. Noticing the feeling, the quality of the in-breath. Allowing the breath to release fully on the out-breath. Noticing that space at the end of the out-breath before the in-breath arises. Maybe a very short pause, but in that space, see if you can notice some peace and develop a friendly relationship with the pause between the breaths. Just allowing the mind to settle. And to become at ease as things gently calm down and cease. So to continue the practice of loving kindness, if you wish, you can just stay with your direct experience, noticing, emphasizing the passing away, the end of a thought, the end of a feeling, with an attitude of friendship and kindness. Or if you wish to follow along, we can bring to mind a loved person, someone who's very dear to you and who you have an uncomplicated, simple relationship with. But see if you can think of someone who is maybe far away, who you haven't seen for some time. Perhaps a friend who's been to visit and left a while ago, or perhaps a community that you've just departed from. Perhaps there's a little bit of sadness. But not any great anguish or pain. Someone who still brings a feeling of happiness to mind when you remember them. Imagining them right in front of you. And wishing them well. Connecting to any feelings in your body which are fairly easy to stay with. If it's comfortable for you, perhaps allowing your awareness to collect itself in the heart area. Just noticing the feelings around the heart. Can be as wide as you wish. Perhaps the whole chest. Perhaps even the whole body. Staying grounded in your body. With a sense of this person who you wish to send metta to. Just offer metta in your own words. For example, may you be happy. May you be free. May you be healthy. May you be at peace. and pausing between each phrase, noticing the end of the words. And allowing the mind to incline, to sense the feeling, the emotion of loving kindness developing in the heart. Just opening to that pause between each phrase, where perhaps nothing much seems to be arising at first. But just noticing the peace, the beauty. That space that allows the love to arise. Continuing to repeat the phrases of metta as often as it feels natural and helpful to do so. But also resting more and more deeply in the space, the absence, the emptiness between each phrase. allowing that space to fill up with the emotion of loving kindness. Allowing the silence to move the mind more and more deeply into stillness. Stillness impregnated with love. Now, gently allowing the sense of this person, perhaps their image, to fade. And just thinking about other beings, maybe the beings in this room who are also some distance away from us. There's a space between us and each other. And that space is available to be filled with loving kindness. Space is what connects us rather than what separates us. So just filling up the space, the distance between us with loving kindness. Wishing one another well. Allowing the metta to become quiet, peaceful, and still. And gently letting go of the perception of individual beings to move towards the idea of all beings who breathe, human, non-human, animals, insects, birds, invisible beings. Beings in all the various realms, heavenly beings, beings suffering in the lower realms. Allowing the perception of beings to merge into one, to the sense of all beings. All breathing beings. Notice a deepening of peace as thoughts and perceptions, faces slowly disappear. And the mind becomes settled in the concept of all beings. Spreading in every direction. From your body out into the universe. Allowing all effort, all thought to relax, to settle, until there's only emptiness, but emptiness suffused with love. Until emptiness and love become one and the same. And now slowly allowing this perception too to cease. And bringing that peace, that emptiness, expansiveness gently in. Back into the room, this virtual room that we share with all the various beings. From Melbourne, through Perth, across Europe, to America, perhaps noticing perceptions of the faces of people in this shared space. Wishing them well. Gently coming back into the room you're seated in. Getting a sense of the space and moving back into your body. Noticing perhaps any tingling feelings on the surface of your skin, getting a sense of your limbs, the parts that are in contact with the ground, grounded, stable. And alert. Noticing your face, muscles in your face. Giving your body some care. Perhaps sending goodwill to any parts of your body that are sick, strained. Weak. And wishing yourself well. Sabe sata, sabe pana, sabe butta. Sabe Sabe aria, sabe navia, sabe deva, sabe munusa, sabe uniparika. Yadalada sampatito mawe kachantu kamasaka. Sadhu. Oh, that's a nice stretch. Excellent. So how is that for you? Anything slightly different, or maybe nothing worth commenting on since we're now used to silence? Maybe in here? Anything? Nothing. They practice really deeply. They have nothing. They experience nothing. They have nothing to say. Okay, super meditation, blissed and blessed. There's a great expansive, wonderful, thank you. Peace, calm, peaceful and calming. Lovely. Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Sometimes we think we have to do the metta, or we have to constantly repeat phrases or keep the person in mind. But if we learn to trust the silence and the stillness and the natural, intuitive metta that is there in our hearts, we can really relax into the quietness, a gentle melting of tension. Okay, and someone has their hand raised, so I'd love to hear from you, Mitko. We don't see your face, but now we'll get to know who you are.
Oh,
Oh,
there we are.
hi.
Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you, dear Venerable Chanda?
Oh, I'm good, thank you. I'm also more peaceful at the end of that. Yes.
Yeah, you look very tired. I wish
I
that you
am
can
very
have some
tired.
rest.
Thank you. Yeah.
I want to ask you a very, very specific question.
Okay.
So, the last 2 months, or maybe 3 months, I've been doing metta quite frequently, I would say.
Yeah.
And after a month of doing it maybe three, four times a day, I started experiencing a great resistance.
Okay.
And
Yeah.
this resistance started getting mixed up with anger, self-resentment, hatred, a lot of fear that I'm not enough, that something is going to attack me. Am I wishing the right thing? Are the right beings coming to me? All sorts of stuff, literally.
Yeah.
And when I tune into this fear in my chest, like literally I enter as if like in an augmented reality. Well, good morning, by the way. With all that.
Yeah.
As if as if I'm kicked out of my body completely and my mind just takes over and I'm in an augmented reality where I'm tortured because I'm not good enough, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm kind of like Well, it was going well. What happened? What happened here? What did I tap into? And what would you suggest I do?
Okay. Thank you for sharing so openly and, you know, about something that's really sounds very intense and quite painful. You know, feelings of self-resentment and self-hatred are so deeply embedded, I think, in many of us, you know, and it seems like you have uncovered some of that through the metta. But it's interesting, you know, sometimes the way we go about our practice is with too many shoulds. You know, we know that metta is good for us. It's something we should practice. And it's a wonderful thing to do. It's a wonderful intention to have, to develop loving kindness in the heart. But if we try too hard, you know, if we have too much of a kind of, you're not good enough, you know, you're not enough, and we come at it with that, then metta starts to be something that's actually another way, in a sense, of tyrannizing ourselves. It's like, you need to develop metta. Once a day is not enough. Twice a day is not enough. Come on, three times a day, then you'll have lots and lots of metta, and you know, you'll be full of self-love. But actually, in the approach, there's too much force. There's already a sense of not being good enough, you know, and expecting too much from ourselves. So perhaps it's a matter of over-efforting, you know, perhaps doing a little bit too much and having, I don't know if that is true for you. I mean, it sounds like you're enjoying it to a point. The other thing that could be happening, I mean, it might be a mix of different things, is that when we do practice metta properly, and when we start to experience a lot of metta, it does uncover the places that have not yet been touched by metta. It does uncover aversion and ill will. And that's precisely the point of metta, right? It's not just to feel good. It's not even necessarily to have loving kindness, the final result. It's actually to overcome ill will, to uproot ill will from the heart. And so in doing that, it exposes the ill will that's there. And perhaps, again, because you did so much metta, the ill will that it exposed came all at once. It also came in force, so to speak, a little bit too much too soon. So I think gentleness is the key here, like really backing off for some time, not only backing off a little bit, backing up maybe from the metta by perhaps bringing it in much more gently, but also not trying to address the ill will, the sort of self-resentment that's coming up all at once. You know, just being tender with that, being kind towards that, but not trying to get rid of it at all, not trying to work it out, or, you know, maybe noticing where you're starting to judge it and starting to want to get rid of it and kind of work through it. And, oh, that's actually not loving kindness. That's actually a bit of ill will to the ill will, right? It's a bit of judgment towards it and, kind of judgment towards yourself for having it, but actually it's okay. So I would say try not to go in, you know, too gung-ho on resolving things and you know, getting too close to that that's uncomfortable, and also just practicing metta in a maybe more spontaneous way throughout the day rather than in the formal meditation. So I don't know, that's a few different ideas. But I think gentleness, to summarize, is the key. And maybe just sneaking a few loving kindness thoughts in throughout your day whenever you notice that you're being unkind or you're struggling a little bit too hard with something. You know, just, oh, this is painful. May I be well. May I be happy. May I just let up here. May I give myself a break. And this is enough. So just trust that, you know, this is going to pass and there'll be a time that you can come back to it a little bit more regularly. But for now, I would say just go easy on yourself. Yeah. So please respond in the chat. A couple more people have their hand up, so we'll try and make it brief so we can finish on time. And I'll try and come to the chat after that and just read out any more comments. So Gloria, hi.
Hi. I just have a question, like, what is the object of metta meditation? Like, because for the breathing meditation, the object is really clear. It's in the breath. But I sometimes felt like, I think I kind of know the answer, but I'm not sure about that. Because like in Satipatthana Sutta, it's like from the body go to the feeling and then go to the mind. And I think it's kind of like this. And then, but sometimes it's like for the meta, I'm not sure what I like, what is the object yeah. of my meditation. And then it actually a separate practice itself.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, great question. Just to compare it with the Anapana, remember that even in Anapana, the breath is only the preliminary object. Okay, so the breath is our initial object, but the breath isn't the meditation. It's actually mindfully one breathes in, one breathes out. It's actually the mindfulness in a sense that we're cultivating rather than the breath itself. So the breath is an object, right? Which helps us to establish mindfulness and helps the meditation unfold. But further on in the breath meditation, that object changes and we start to perceive the breath through the mind sense door. So we start to actually see the breath more as maybe softness or light or brightness and even bliss. And that then changes to become the object of meditation. So with every kind of meditation, the object changes bit by bit as we kind of each meditation object is like a stepping stone to a deeper stage. And it's similar with metta. So we can say in the beginning that the words are the object, you know, may you be happy can be the object. But that is a stepping stone to the feeling of metta that starts to grow in the heart. So the words are kind of the anchor for the mind, just like the breath is the anchor for the mind in the beginning. But then we pause in between the phrases to see the effect that those words have on our hearts, on our emotional, on the emotional field, if you like. So then the emotion starts to become the metta. The feeling of metta starts to become increasingly our object. You know, or like in this meditation that we did, I even went further than that and said, how about the peace that's the result of that feeling? Yeah, that becomes the object. So, but generally speaking in metta, it's the phrases in the beginning and then it's the feeling, it's the actual experience of metta that becomes the object. Yeah. Alongside the words, for some people, it's really helpful to have the perception of the person we're sending metta to. So most metta teachers would say that that's very important as well. Bhantisarjato, he goes just with the words, and that's a simple approach. But for some people, it's actually a combination of the person you're sending metta to and the phrases of metta to get the feeling of metta going. And for others, it's entirely the visual perception of that person or the felt sense of that person. So it's really whatever stimulates the feeling of metta, and then the feeling of metta becomes the object. And just as in breath meditation, the feeling of metta goes from perhaps piti sukha, like so a feeling of some kind of rapture, which has many dimensions. It could be softness, it could be ease, it could be relaxation, it could be a warmth in the heart, or it could be quite an intense experience of piti sukha that you can relate to love. You know, oh, this is a feeling of love and kindness. So it's a bit different for everyone, but that becomes more and more intense. And that also can then lead into nimittas, like it can become light. And then it can take the mind into deep meditation. So the main difference between Anapana and metta is that in Anapana, the mind gets calm quite quickly in some cases, if that's a suitable practice for you. And then the piti arises later as a result of the calm. Whereas in metta, like it's the feeling of love and bliss that comes fairly early. And then that simplifies and brings the mind into stillness. So, see what works for you. But certainly I find the phrase is very useful, because without something that's fairly consistent as an object, the mind will wander off and it will take quite a long time to develop the feeling of metta. For other people, they get the feeling quite quickly and they don't need to use so many phrases. But even for me, when the feeling of metta is quite intense, I still drop a phrase in from time to time. It becomes less and less frequent. Sometimes it comes down to a single word, like happy, peaceful, and they're, you know, fairly far apart, but they're still there to keep the mind on track. Does that make sense?
Yes. So just go with the flow of the mind.
To a degree, but keep the phrases. Don't let go too soon.
Okay.
Because when I say I keep them even when it's established, I mean, even after 2 hours of meditation, sometimes if the mind's really full of metta, I still drop them in, because the cause for the metta is the phrases, just like the cause for the PT in and the peace in breath meditation is the breath. So if you go away from it for too long before your mind is really powerful, you will lose the PT, the metta will start to reduce. So don't drop them too soon.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Excellent. So it is already 10 o'clock. So I'm going to ask my volunteers to put the links in. Yes, they're already there. So for anyone who needs to leave now, you can find some links as to how to be involved and supporters. And I think there's an email address as well that you could perhaps pop in the box. If anyone wants to offer food or come and visit, you can write to us. And for others, there'll be 5 more minutes, I guess. I'm going to come to Johnny and then to some of the messages in the chat. So if you have 5 minutes, please stay. If not, we'll see you soon. Okay. See you probably next week, I think, for suttas. And yeah, bye, Shalina. Just come to Johnny for 5 more minutes.
Hello, thank you.
Hi.
Well, good, whatever time it is. So I didn't know how to formulate the question, so I'll just kind of blurt it out. For me, it's very interesting the nuance and the difference in nuance between cultivating metta and allowing what is already there to come up.
Yeah.
Because for me, in my practice, if I'm using the phrases, for example, it doesn't feel like I'm uncovering something that's already there. It feels like I'm kind of generating something. And then I guess the question is there a way of bringing that flavor of uncovering something that's already there into using the phrases, the kind of more deliberate cultivation practice?
Yeah.
I hope that makes sense.
Yeah, kind of, yeah. I think, again, for me, that, I mean, we talk about uncovering something that's there. This is a certain philosophical view of the mind. Okay, so I'm not going to get into philosophy around Buddhism now, but there's a certain view, and it's more the Mahayana view. And it's true that we all have a lot of wonderful, wholesome qualities by the very virtue of being human beings. But it's not that the mind is intrinsically good or bad or anything. The mind is conditioned, according to the Buddha's teaching and understanding in the early suttas. So there is still a lot we can do to cultivate wholesome states. So it's true that many of us might already have a lot of love and kindness through past cultivation or through being able to access something that is already there in your language, which I'm sure, you know, many of us can relate to. But the Buddha did talk about cultivation and the importance of cultivation, because we're not yet enlightened. It isn't yet enough. And also because metta practice, as I was saying before, is directly aimed at uprooting the defilements, particularly ill will. And so, yes, there is already some metta in us, but there are already a lot of areas which that metta does not reach to. Yeah, there's also ill will. And so we're trying to come to that. So if we only practice to kind of bring out that's already there, so to speak, we're not necessarily developing more metta, say, towards our enemies or towards people that, you know, are not dear to us. So in the Buddha's teachings, it goes through the various categories of person to make sure that there's no stone left unturned, if you like. There's no area, either other beings external to us or even within ourselves, that we're still, that still generate ill will. So we can even turn that love and kindness towards our mental states, right? So that we're not only looking for the beauty and the purity and the love that's already there, but we're able to have metta towards the anger, towards the despair, towards the sorrow. So we're really cultivating metta at quite a deep level. But in terms of a balance of sort of staying with what's there already and, you know, using the phrases, I would say it is very individual. And if you already feel connected to a sense of metta, you don't need to use the phrases very often. And you can put them in very gently. You know, the phrases, it's a funny language is English, because we're saying, may I be happy. It almost sounds like, may I be happy. And I taught a retreat in America and somebody said that it almost sounded to her like pleading with herself. May I be happy, please, you know. And different people relate to those words differently. But really what it means is like, it's like a blessing that we're giving to ourselves. It's like a gift. It's like, may I be happy. It's like a beautiful thought and a beautiful sort of sense of generosity, sense of benevolence that we're trying to develop towards ourselves or another. So we can say it very gently, you know, may I be peaceful. May I don't know how you say it gently, but, you know, it depends on the tone that you use. It depends on the perceptions you have around the words. You can have imagery there. Like, for example, may you be happy to offend would be like me giving them really a gift and looking them in the eye and just having such a warm feeling towards them. So it wouldn't actually take much effort at all. It would almost be like the words are just capturing a feeling that's already there, you know, and I wouldn't need to use it very often, but I would just use it consistently, even with fairly big gaps, to make sure the mind stays on track, to stop the mind getting into distracting thoughts and, you know, into something that's sort of meta but not quite meta, because I'm getting sleepy or I'm getting kind of, you know, a story is going on, or, you know, conceptions around that practice. I don't know if that makes sense, but I think it is a kind of balance between the technique and the intuition, and it's finding that balance for ourselves. So I hope that helps. But if you feel like you're doing too much, you probably are. So just, you know, be a little more gentle with it. Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Okay, you're so welcome. So I'm just going to read through a few of the comments because I don't like to leave anyone out. I won't comment too far back to the comments. So, okay, I experienced strong palpitations during the first half and then really calm. The mind feels brighter. Thank you. Noticing circumstances have their causes and they will go when it's time, I guess. Absolutely. So we don't have to make things end. We don't have to make things arise. We're just inviting the mind to notice those things. Amazing experience. Learned a new technique of enjoying or blessing cessation. Fantastic. I experienced similar things by giving metta. Stored emotions in the body come up. Yeah, that's in response to Mitko, I think. Something there in Cyrillian script. So I'm guessing you are from Bulgaria. I think most people have left. Thank you for sharing. Particularly enjoyed the Burmese chant. More questions. In the Rattivinita Sutta, the goal is stated to be anupada parinibbana, extinguishment without fuel. That seems to be the ultimate expression of karuna. May your sufferings be extinguished without fuel, never to arise again. Yes, yeah, something like that. Yeah. Anupadana parinibbana. Anupada. Yeah, it's like anupada. You could call it without fuel, yes, because then somebody's saying, how can there be parinibbana with fuel, which is quite right. So it's kind of like without remainder is usually the way it's translated. Yeah. It just means everything absolutely has ceased. Everything. Never to arise again. Anupada would be translated as not arising or without arising. That's another way to translate it, yeah. Upada vayadamino, yeah. Yeah, not arising. It's basically another synonym for ceasing. To arise and subside is the way of things. Yeah, so see if you can get a taste for the ending of things, for the ceasing of things, and notice those pauses that you have in your day. You know, when you're not actually, you don't need to be busy. You don't need to be carrying the past into the present. You know, there are pauses throughout the day and we can find them at the end of every breath. So I will now let you all go and I will let myself go too. And notice the pause and the peace of when we all disappear and turn off our computers. So you can unmute yourselves if you wish so we can hear your lovely voices and we can wave goodbye. Ciao.